from the stock market floor to your laptop, we are Voice America Business.
This broadcast is for information purposes only and should not be regarded as a recommendation or an offer to sell or solicitation of an offer to buy securities or investments mentioned herein. This broadcast is the opinion of Jordan Kimmel. At the time of this broadcast, a member of Mr. Kimmel's household owns shares of the company discussed in this program. Additional information on topics discussed herein available upon request.
This is Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Profitable Investing is a show that will take you through the ever-changing world of investing for a profit. Now here's the host of Profitable Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to Profitable Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And let's get right to the headline, folks. How bad could it possibly get in the stock market? Well, let's reword that. How good of an opportunity can we be presented with, folks? And let me just say that we're always thinking long-term, we're always looking long-term, but let's zero in on where we are right this second. We just took out all of the lows were triggered, all the sell alerts were triggered. Yesterday afternoon we went to 5.5-year lows on NASDAQ. We broke through every channel, every low. And what would that generate? Yup. They would trigger the stop losses. The amateurs would come in and panic this morning. We saw it. And here we are at 11 a.m. and what has already happened, all of the index have turned sharply higher. And, folks, let me say that anybody who hasn't sold yet doesn't exist. Everybody who's wanted to sell, everybody who thought about selling, everybody who's heard about forced redemptions at mutual funds, at hedge funds, everybody who's wanted and willing to sell has sold. What's left? What's left is a tremendous amount of money on the sidelines. What is left is an amazing opportunity for anybody willing to go through the rubble, cut through the nonsense, and ask the simple question, who out there in this wacky environment is actually generating free cash flow? Who out there in this crazy environment is actually accelerating their revenues? Now, if that sounds like a needle in a haystack, guess what? That's right, it is. And normally, when we identify these companies, we have to pay the price to the momentum investors just when they get up and buy what's going higher. So we have to actually go ahead and pay for this privilege to own these great companies. Well, today we don't. Today, there is no momentum in this market whatsoever. This is one of the rare opportunities that I have been in the business where you can go in and buy companies with accelerating profit margins, and accelerating revenue, and accelerating cash flow, and actually buy them ultra cheaply. Now, the smartest guys, not only Warren Buffett, who has been cited again and again for hoarding his cash for years, waiting for Mr. Market to get irrational. Yes, he's been putting his money to work, but how about the other names? The Julian Robertson elk, the group that ran $20 billion hedge fund and decided to get out because valuations were just too high. Well, he's out there buying. And, folks, all I can say is we go back to the magnet premise that 99% of, and more than that, but almost every company is not worthy of investing in. Almost every stock is not either growing fast enough, not valued well enough, not spinning off enough cash, and then there is the needle in the haystack. And when you can identify those companies, what you need to do is to close your ears about the fund redemptions. What's really dramatic is when you look at this market, this is a market that can rally 1,500 points in a day. We've already seen 1,000 points in a day. We're going to top that record right now. And what you're going to see take place are people asking, is this another, just another bear market rally? Or did I actually miss the bottom? And those people are going to sit around, and then they're going to wait, and then they're going to hear that, well, let's wait for a pullback because the market needs to kind of retest again. And then that retest doesn't come, and then what? And then you begin to see the number of new lows dry up. You begin to see people looking at valuation levels that they realize are great buys, but they just kind of wanted to wait for the dust to clear. Well, as I said to one of the smartest guys I work with yesterday, I said, here's what's going to happen. My opinion is several of the best value investors are going to do a gut check here and start to buy. One guy, maybe two, will catch the exact bottom of the market. And the rest of them are going to buy at significantly higher levels because the news won't turn good for quite some time. The heels, the wounds that have opened up, the pain that has been accounted, the people who again have sworn no matter what, they will never buy another stock as long as they live. Well, folks, it just takes some time. It takes some time for all this to get through. What you really need to do is to recognize, you have to ask yourself the question, how soon do I need my money? And folks, if you need your money tomorrow, 6 months from now, if you're going to be closing on a piece of property, if your college, kids' college education bill that you plan on sending in 6 to 9 months, that money should never have been put in the market and should not go in the market at this time either. But if you are looking at 2 or 3 years out, you are being served up with a slow pitch that you can decipher where the cash flow exists, where the opportunities exist, what the best companies in each industry are, and just buy a third. This is what we talked about back 2 months ago. We said we want you to buy a third of a position. We don't want to be so bold that we're going to call the day of the bottom, the moment of the bottom, nor does that even interest me. What we said is sometime around December, we want you to put the second third in. And then sometime in February, March, or April, if and only if that third third comes in higher than the last one, would we encourage you to take your third third and get fully invested? This is a time to be dipping your toe. This is not a time to be going short. This is not a time to be panicking out at the low. This is not a time to be counting your bank account. Everybody knows this pain. Everybody knows corporate earnings are suffering. Everybody knows these things. But what people forget is that you never fight the Fed. Not only do you don't fight the Fed, we have something different this time, folks. You never fight a globally coordinated Fed. We are seeing countries taking turns like Roman candles, injecting liquidity, lowering interest rates, and creating what is a very steep yield curve. Now, the yield curve is a concept, and the yield curve is an entity that doesn't change like investors' moods every day or like the weather. What happens is when you see an inverted yield curve where short-term yields are above long-term yields, invariably that leads to a recession. Now, back in October of last year, we were reminded this time is different. This time it's a global economy, and this time, whatever the this time it was, folks, I didn't see this coming, and I thought there was a shot of a correction, and we saw the advanced decline line stumble, but nobody thought there would not be a brokerage firm standing 1 year later. Now we are in a position where there's not a brokerage firm standing anymore. They become commercial banks. There's all kinds of liquidity problems hitting the market. But suddenly you have an extraordinarily sharp, steep yield curve. This means that incentive for banks to lend, only yield banks aren't lending. I think that's what we're hearing. I want you to kind of rewind the tape a little bit back to February, March of this year, as the experts continue to look into the rearview mirror. What we were told was that oil had to go to $200. There just wasn't enough of it in the ground. We can't get enough of it out of the ground. We can't refine enough of it. Oil must go to $200. And by the way, the dollar had to continue to go down. The dollar had to continue to go lower. On and on and on and on. Now, all you need to do is rewind the tape just a couple of months. Now, with oil trading already down at multi-year lows, with oil right now trading at $51 a barrel, having broken 50 this morning, well, folks, I saw 199 at the pump yesterday. Oil is actually below historical levels, accounting for inflation. We now see the strongest currency in the world is what? The U.S. dollar? The one thing that couldn't possibly go up no matter what? And, folks, if you look at the steep yield curve, if you look at the cash on the sidelines, and you look at the unbelievable pessimism that reigns through the stock market, you know when you come back and you look 6 or 9 months later, somehow, something, somewhere, everything changed. And what you need to do right here is you need to just control your emotions. Now, later today, I'll be over at CNBC a little after 3 o'clock. Tomorrow, I have one of the most important meetings in American history as I try to solve the biggest problem that exists, and we're doing it with the best media partner out there. We're going to help build trust, folks, because that's what's missing. It's not cash. The cash is on the sidelines. It is not hard work. America is known for it. It's not lack of ingenuity. It's just trust and time. And, folks, just look backwards at the U.S. dollar and oil talk of this year. That's what we're hearing about the stock market. I started the segment by saying, isn't this the worst of times? Well, folks, we are not given these kind of opportunities often. Let's keep our heads, let's keep our wits, and let's go to a quick commercial break. We're going to be right back with Brown Mincher, the award-winning author of Secrets of Money. That sounds important. Practical financial literacy. Folks, we're going to be right back following this quick break. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
Bye. money, money. Up-to-date business and financial news. Money, money. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Magnet Investment Group, LLC, is based in Randolph, New Jersey, and is a registered investment advisory firm providing wealth management for individuals and institutions. Magnet's investment strategy combines aspects of growth, value, and momentum investing to achieve superior long-term risk-adjusted returns. The group applies their proprietary Magnet stock selection process to a variety of client-specified benchmarks and risk tolerance levels. The group is led by Jordan Kimmel with over 20 years' experience in the securities field.
Self-leadership is more important than corporate leadership. In the hustle and bustle world we live in, we need to be reminded that in all failures and successes, we are the common denominators. Each week, let Daniel Gutierrez help bring you the tools you need to manage self-leadership, resulting in self-success. Make your mark in your industry. Make sure you listen to Right Here, Right Now. Brought to you by Waste Management. Every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
With thousands of homes destroyed or damaged by fire, lots of people are wondering what to do next. If you are a wildfire survivor, SoCalHelp.org can help you find support and decide what to do right now, wherever you are. This easy-to-use website is a place you can go to get immediate help with food, shelter, and important medications and start getting your life back on track. Get help now with insurance, legal issues, and find professional services like doctors and counselors. You can access contact information for national agencies, hotlines, and services that have the resources you need. You can also connect with other survivors and people who can help. For the answers and support you need to rebuild, visit SoCalHelp.org.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Now here's the host of Profitable Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
And folks, welcome back to Profitable Investing with me, your host, Jordan Kimmel. And in this world of financial business, we're hearing all kinds of terms, we're hearing all kinds of emotions being thrown around, but what do Americans actually know about financial investing? Well, we're bringing on Braun Minchers, the award-winning author, the speaker, and the author of Secrets of Money, a guide for everyone on practical financial literacy. And if there was ever a time we needed you, Braun, today's the day. Thanks so much for joining us. Braun, are you out there?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now loud and clear, Braun. Thanks again for joining us. And again, this is a super important topic at the moment. What I'd love you to do before we get into your book and the most important aspects you want to discuss, go back a little bit in your own bio and tell us how you got to this point and how you got to be the expert in financial literacy.
It's a good story. I'm still in my young 30s. I started out as a kid who dropped out of college, started with nothing, but I did start a small business when I was about 17 years old. I always got a good work ethic from my parents, never a lot of financial support, but a lot of moral support and good family backgrounds and a lot of, you know, see what hard work would allow you to accomplish in life and how that would allow you to live the life you want. So I started very small. I started a vending route when I was 17 years old and had little cardboard honor boxes that I placed in break rooms and offices all over Denver, which is where I grew up. And I ended up building up that little route, and every week I'd go through and I'd collect the coins and I'd put Snickers bars back in there. It was a small little business. I made a little extra money. But what helped me is after 18 months of doing that, I actually was able to sell that business for $5,000, which at the time was all the money in the world to me.
Okay.
And I turned that into a totally unrelated business. I got in the bus transportation business with that little seed capital, built that into a multi-million dollar enterprise, sold that back in the mid-90s, and then found myself in the telecom business, which is where I was until 2004. And that was a very, very successful business, and I built that up and sold it. But what's interesting is I learned more along the way from all the failures I had. You know, I'm telling you about the quick successes and basically breaking 15 years down into 30 seconds. But I really learned more from my failures doing that, and I got my hands through all these different businesses, got my hands in a variety of different businesses, and got into real estate and mortgages and lending and all sorts of stuff like that. And that's really what's given me the passion to pursue this initiative on financial literacy.
Right. Well, Brian, I think that's a fantastic background. And again, I think you said something super important, which is learning from your failures as much as your successes. And so let me just kind of throw out a comment, and then I'll let you take it somewhere. People look at this concept called EBITDA, this earnings before interest and taxes, amortization. And I always say, isn't it really cash flow you're looking at when you're really trying to understand financial literacy? Isn't it dollars in and dollars out, and nothing can be ignored?
Agree with you completely. During my business career, when we've ever had challenges, I mean, every company runs into that where you have cash flow issues, and it's a very simple solution. You either find ways to bring more money in or to let less money go out, or a combination thereof. And that's the same model that we as consumers have to deal with today in the economic situation. It's very simple.
Well, I think that, it sounds very simple. Is it just a matter of people living beyond their means? I mean, what I'm hearing, and for the first time, that they just do not have any real training in financial literacy, all through education until really select high schools, and unless you take finance in college, you're never taught to balance a checkbook before you become an adult.
You just hit the nail on the head, which is my whole mission and initiative. I am working feverishly and have been for the last couple of years to bring a new awareness to what I call the financial illiteracy epidemic that's sweeping our country, and you said it exactly correct. Most people are surprised to hear this, but with the exception of three states, we at the high school level do not require students to take a semester-long personal finance class to graduate. We would never think of letting people graduate high school if they didn't know math, English, or science. But we let them out into the real world without ever teaching them the basics of personal finance. And I don't think one person could argue with me that that is probably the number one most important life skill to have today. And so much of the economic turmoil we have out there is due to the fact that consumers didn't know what they were doing. And to some degree, it's not their fault. Nobody ever taught us. I never got taught formally. I mean, I had a great high school. I went to public education. I had some great business classes. But I never got the basics personal finance, and as a result, I made mistakes. I got in credit card debt. I had problems, and I luckily was able to find my way out of it, and I learned more, like I said before, I learned more from my failures than my successes, but I took the initiative, got myself educated, got myself out. But how do we let people go through high school or even college for that matter? And like you said, short of a specialized degree, becoming an accountant or a finance class, we never teach people the basics about credit cards, banking, buying a house, which is most people's largest purchase they'll ever make in their life, mortgages, buying a car, shopping for insurance, saving for the future, a little bit of tax planning. We never teach people this, yet we throw them out in the real world, and we end up in the situation we're at right now where we look at the headlines on the news every day about the stock market meltdown and the credit crisis and everything that's happening on Wall Street. But at the end of the day, it comes back to Main Street, and it comes back to us as consumers. And so, to make a long story short, my end goal is to get financial education classes mandated as a high school graduation requirement in all 50 states.
Right, and I think that's fantastic. Now, in your book, Secrets of Money, why don't you walk through a couple of the chapters and a couple things that you think are probably the most critical but overlooked parts of elementary financial literacy?
The number one key revolves around your credit score and maintaining the highest credit score possible. And this is where I have challenges with. The first day college kids show up on campus, in exchange for a free T-shirt, they get a credit card. And I don't have any problem with the credit card companies. People want to claim they're predatory lenders. Well, you know what? They're acting within the law. I'm a free market guy. But if we're going to give them the credit card, we certainly have a responsibility to train them how to use it. So what happens, that three-digit credit score is so important throughout the rest of your life. And it's never too late to fix it, but it's much easier to know what you're doing ahead of time. And that's just simply paying your bills on time, not overextending your credit, really basic things like this. But people have this misconception that the credit score, the only thing it's used for is limited to determine will you get a loan or not. The reality is, in today's day and age, with electronic underwriting and the way these systems work, pretty much everybody can get approved for a loan, whether it be a student loan, a credit card, or a car loan. But your credit score will determine the rate and the terms that that's extended to you. And if we're talking about something like a home mortgage, so what happens is kids go into college, they get a credit card, they get in debt, they decide not to make a couple months payments, they overextend their limit, it hurts their credit score. They come out, they get their good job, and someday they just say, well, we want to buy a house. Well, they're probably more likely than not going to get approved for that, but they may be paying 9 or 10% as a mortgage rate, where if they had just known how important that credit score was and managed their credit more wise during college, they would have had a much lower credit score, a much lower interest rate, maybe 6%. And just those couple percentage points, as you know, can be thousands and thousands of dollars per year. But that credit score, moreover than determining your interest rates, which is probably the most important, is now being used in many states to determine your car insurance rate. So they're correlating. Somebody who is responsible in managing credit is going to be less likely to get in a car accident, and so they'll give you lower insurance premiums if you have better insurance quality. If you ever need to get a surety bond of some sort, so if you got a, you know, if you're a CFP or you ever go into real estate or become a mortgage broker, most of these require some sort of surety bonds. Those bond premiums are based on your credit score, but so many employers now are checking credit scores. And you could get denied employment or have an offer rescinded if you don't have a good credit score. And I have a story of a friend of mine who graduated from college a few years ago, got her dream job offered to her for a major production company. And they conditioned it upon a background and credit check. But she told everyone about this job, and it's what she always wanted to do. Well, you know what? To get herself through college, she didn't know this. She had used her credit cards and overextended herself. And so her credit wasn't what they called good. And, again, they don't know the details of it. They just see the score. And so they rescinded her job offer. And actually the group that was offering the job was Oprah's organizations, where she always wanted to work.
Mm.
And so the basic key, I mean, the basic building block, whether you agree with it or not in concept, it is so important to maintain a good credit score. But the challenge is we just never teach kids about this. And when I say kids, I'm meaning high school students, college students, even the rest of us. We never teach people the basics of this, and like I said in the beginning, it's never too late to go back and fix it. It just takes time. But if you know it in advance, you can just be, you know, you can be proactive rather than reactive.
Right. Look, an ounce of prevention, we all know, is worth a pound. Now, listen, we're going to have to come up to a commercial fairly soon. Born, we know your book is available on Amazon, but do you have a website, or is there a way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I have two websites. Either my name, BraunMincher.com, BraunMincher, or I also have the website, FinancialLiteracyQuiz.com.
Beautiful. And there's got to be something that I forgot to ask. Maybe it's on your mind. I'll open it up. Your closing thoughts.
Well, the keys are we teach math, English, and science in the schools, but why not personal finance? And if we've got time to go into it, I'll discuss some of the reasons why the schools don't want to teach financial literacy classes.
Go for it.
So I've been racking my head the last 6 months making presentations to school systems across the country saying, I want to help you get this in the class. I'll give you free books. I'll give you the curriculum. I'll help train your teachers. I'll come do some of the classes. This is so important. And I got resistance from all of them. Schools are very big about discussions and committees and meetings, but very low on action. And I finally had, in a state in the Midwest, I had a high school principal pull me aside and say, I never told you this and don't ever repeat this to anyone, but I'm going to tell you why schools across the country don't want to teach financial literacy classes and, moreover, why they don't want to make them a graduation requirement. This is surprising stuff. He says there's three reasons.
Huh. Interesting. Well, listen, I appreciate the time. I think the listeners got a treat here. I want to wish you success on your mission getting financial literacy spread throughout the youth. And that's going to lead to good things for the country and good health. And thanks for the time.
Great being with you. Have me back again. Thanks, Jordan.
Terrific. And, folks, we got to take a quick break. It's that time. We're going to be right back with Voice America. We're going to bring on Charles Whelan, the financial columnist from Yahoo. author of Naked Economics. And we'll be right back following this break.
Money, money, up-to-date business and financial news. Money, money, call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Everyone faces conflict at home, at work, in the community, in the world. This show is about how to fix those conflicts with practical tips and techniques. Doug Knoll brings to the internet airwaves the first of its kind, a show that teaches peaceful resolution to life's daily battles. That's Fix Your Conflicts, broadcasting live every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Our team of investment professionals, supported by our quantitative magnet stock selection process, is committed to the goal of providing excess market returns to clients around the world. We target the fastest growing companies that are still trading at a discount to their intrinsic value. Companies in this category are likely to enjoy dynamic earnings growth. We call these companies magnets. They tend to simulate investor response and create powerful returns. The value added benefit of magnets, quantitative analysis and portfolio management has been extraordinary. After ranking all eligible companies, we only buy less than the top 1% of the companies we monitor. The first step involves quantitative analysis of individual companies. Often special situation companies with a market niche are captured by our screening process. Our strategy is intended to take advantage of our global economy while achieving long-term capital appreciation.
I'm Lori Tucker with FedEx. Did you know that 1 in 8 babies is born prematurely and more newborns die from premature birth than any other cause? Well, solutions are within our grasp. Together with the March of Dimes, we can find the causes of premature birth and help moms have healthy, full-term babies. Join the March of Dimes and FedEx by signing the petition for preemies at marchofdimes.com/petition.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Now here's the host of Profitable Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
And folks, welcome back one more time to Profitable Investing with me, Jordan Kimmel. We're going to bring on one of the most read columnists in the United States, Charles Whelan from the Yahoo Finance columnist and the author of Naked Economics. And Charles, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be with you.
All righty, terrific. And folks, you know, we know this is a treacherous market. It's a whole emotional driven business. Before we get into Naked Economics, I love the title. If you could, Charles, get a little bit into your own background and how you got to be at this spot as the Finance Yahoo columnist.
Well, I kind of backed into it. So I'm really a policy guy by interest. The first thing I did after college was travel around the world, writing columns for New Hampshire newspaper, and I found myself migrating towards interesting policy issues. I went to a Thai prison to visit American prisoners who were in jail in Thailand, and I discovered that we don't have a treaty with Thailand, so that if you go to prison in Thailand, unlike most other countries, you don't get to come back and serve your sentence in the U.S. I went to India, wrote about clean drinking water. So then I went back, I became a speechwriter for the governor of Maine for a while, and then went back to school for a long, long time and studied public policy, got my PhD in public policy. But I wrote my dissertation and worked closely with a lot of economists at the University of Chicago. And so for me, economics has always been a tool for understanding the rest of the world.
Interesting, because the economists, if you take it from economists only, they often get it wrong. When you're mixing the interdisciplinary, it gives you a much more rounded approach. Fabulous background. Charles, give me an idea. I haven't seen, I'm guessing Naked Economics is a new book that's out. I haven't seen it yet, though.
Well, Naked Economics has been around a while. The column in Yahoo, which is The Naked Economist, kind of grew out of the book. But the book came out in about 2002, and it was written pretty much by accident. So I was the correspondent. We have a lot of economics going on here. I was the correspondent for the economic for the Economist magazine out of Britain. And I was actually trying to write a book on the gambling industry, and that was going nowhere. I was also teaching this course on the side on economics for journalists, and I called my agent and I said, look, I need a book on economics to give these students. Can't be a textbook. They'll be bored to death. I just want them to understand how important it is. And there was this long pause, and she said, you know what? This is the book you're going to write, and I'm going to read it, and it's going to be called Economics for Poets. So it was born kind of inadvertently, and then I filled that niche as kind of the person who can explain economic concepts in lay terms.
Right, and I'm going to apologize because I haven't seen that book. I do quite a bit of reading. Now, your column in Yahoo, there's two types of things. We either want to teach a man to fish, we want to give him a fish for the day. What are you trying to do in the column?
The column is basically designed to weigh in on current issues using kind of the economist's view of the world. So, you know, here's the current issue, whether it's the bailout of the big three or health care or education. Here's what the current thinking is among academics. Here's why they think that. Here's what the research shows. To just kind of connect the academy, which is often esoteric and, you know, opaque, to what people actually care about, and to do it in an understanding, an easy, accessible, sometimes humorous way.
Great. And so let me just say that, you know, I've been at this for about 25 years. I've been investing actually for longer. But what I see right now is facts don't really matter as much as emotion. And I find this to be an incredibly emotionally driven market. This is part of the volatility. What do you see, you know, the pulse? What do you think the big issues that investors should maybe be looking at, thinking about, so that they could plan their future and plan their investments?
Well, I agree with you completely that we've got psychology driving the markets. Now, there are also some really unfortunate fundamentals, but my guess is we've probably overshot or will overshoot. I mean, I think you talked about some of the interdisciplinary contributions to economics. I think the whole behavioral economics, the marriage of psychology and economics, is actually one of the most interesting fields. And what we're learning, by the way, is that people do get emotional when they start dealing with markets. They get emotional on the upside, as we saw with the housing bubble and the internet bubble and other things. They kind of get carried away with this euphoria, and they drive things way beyond any sane price. But I think what's most relevant now is there's equal evidence that they get carried away on the downside. And I think this has all kinds of repercussions. One is, I mean, just to take the mortgage industry. So certainly the mortgage brokers and the banks were giving out loans to anybody who could kind of present themselves and breathe at the time of application. And that created or at least contributed to a lot of what's going on. I would argue right now they're probably doing the opposite. They're basically denying a lot of folks who would be quite creditworthy and therefore compounding the credit problem. So you see it there. I think you probably see it in the markets. I think there's certainly some, I don't know which ones they are, but I think there are probably some healthy companies out there that have been over-punished in the market simply because they kind of got caught in this downward spiral. So I think basically we can't assume that investors are able to be dispassionate. And for people who are out there sorting for bargains, that might be the place to start.
Right, interesting. And see, I agree that there are some very significant issues and problems. I happen to be more bullish on most simply because we kind of narrow in on a very select group of companies that are delivering at that moment, and we only stay true to the ones that continue to stay healthy. My question is, as we try to eliminate the best we can emotions, and I just wrote an article on this. I'm great you mentioned the behavioral side. Is there any time that the behavioral side makes sense, or are people just prone to always be subject to their fear and greed at the wrong time?
Well, I think understand that I'm not sure it's ever the best approach, but I think if you understand that other people are prone to herd mentality, it might save you from getting stampeded. You know, I remember my dad once told me I was shorting Amazon.com. It was the only time in my life I've ever shorted a stock, and it was not at the top. It was very near the top of the tech bubble. You know, and I just looked at it and I said, this is insane. And I called my dad, who spent his life pretty much in and around Wall Street, and he said, look, you're right. But you never want to be on the wrong side of hysteria. And he was right, because it's still Amazon, I think, was up 20 the next day. And, you know, the bubble wasn't done. And so I think the first thing is just, you know, if you're the only rational one in the room, you still may be the victim of a bank run. On the other hand, I think if you can't put your kind of sanity hat on and you've got some liquidity and you're the one who's willing to go out and sort through the smoking wreckage, it's probably a pretty good opportunity for you.
Right, and I think you hit that right on the head. I think that most people are under the impression that being a contrarian is always the right thing to be. Well, the fact is the trend is your friend right up until the end, and it's only when there's a consensus, right?
Exactly,
it's only when there's
right.
a consensus that they're wrong. Maybe, and again, we don't want to be victims of ourselves with ego and be able to predict the future. Is there anything that you kind of feel or see right now where there's a unanimous kind of a feeling that you think may be, you know, ready to turn? Is there, you want to handle that one?
Here's the big question, and we can talk about this. So in terms of the economy, the kind of the real economy as we describe it, you know, cars and houses and retail and so on, I think that's going to get worse and probably significantly worse. I think one of the other curious things about economics is when each of us reacts rationally to this bad economy, you go home and you say, gee, I'm just not going to buy that television this year, we're going to stay home, not do vacation, we each contribute to making the problem worse. I mean, this is the paradox, and we're all guilty of it, and then it percolates to the economy, and we're in the middle of that. You see these retail sales numbers, you see the auto numbers, just awful, and of course that breeds further layoffs, which decreases spending. I mean, that's the cycle that's got to be turned around on the economic side. The question is, has the market fully priced all of that already? This is apparent to everybody, so is the market basically at or near its bottom, and is it ready to start pricing in some kind of recovery? And that I don't know, but I think for people who are thinking about investing, that is the operative question. And remember, you also don't have to hit the bottom. All you have to do is be near the bottom to do just fine.
I think that's a great point. Now, one of the things I always like to ask investors, who've been real successful, and I'm curious where you go. What, in addition to your column, and everyone will know where to find you, right on Yahoo, it's a lot of people's homepage, and they see you right there, but Charles, what do you read, or are there any books you recommend, or any sites or places that you're getting some of your information that you'd steer people to, maybe some other authors on Yahoo?
I think my favorite book, and the guy actually who wrote the introduction for my book is a professor of mine, is Burton Malkiel, who wrote what's become a classic, which is The Random Walk Down Wall Street. Now, he's obviously an efficient markets guy. He's going to advise you to buy index funds, which I think is actually a perfectly fine strategy for anybody who doesn't have a lot of time or inclination to try and beat the market. But it's a terrific starting point, and I think it lays out the underlying theory, gives you a better sense of how markets really work. That's the place where I would advise most people to start.
Right, and I think that is a great book, and I think your point is well taken. Most people don't have the time to really understand or track the market, and they're just as likely to come into the hot manager who's about to get called, and more people lose money in good mutual funds just because they're trying to trade in and out of them. I think that's a great comment. And I think that all I can say is there's so much fodder out there for you to look for to write your column. And I really appreciate you taking the time with us. And I urge everyone, go over to yahoo.com and maybe go back and read Naked Economics. And, Charles, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
All righty, we'll speak again soon, I hope. Folks, it's time. I hear the music in my ear. It is time for a quick commercial break. We got to get the sponsors in here. We're going to be right back with more profitable investing following this quick break.
Stocks, bonds, 401ks, investments, refinancing. We can help you. Call now toll free, 866-472-5790, 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Self-leadership is more important than corporate leadership. In the hustle and bustle world we live in, we need to be reminded that in all failures and successes, we are the common denominators. Each week, let Daniel Gutierrez help bring you the tools you need to manage self-leadership, resulting in self-success. Make your mark in your industry. Make sure you listen to Right Here, Right Now. Brought to you by Waste Management. Every Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Magnet Investment Group, LLC, is based in Randolph, New Jersey, and is a registered investment advisory firm providing wealth management for individuals and institutions. Magnet's investment strategy combines aspects of growth, value, and momentum investing to achieve superior long-term risk-adjusted returns. The group applies their proprietary Magnet stock selection process to a variety of client-specified benchmarks and risk tolerance levels. The group is led by Jordan Kimmel with over 20 years' experience in the securities field.
Is your job heavenly or closer to hell on earth? Maybe it's time you stop waiting on employers to make you satisfied and learn how to recognize your own career contentment. Jeff Garten and his expert guests show you how every Thursday at 12 noon Pacific when you tune in to Career Contentment Radio on the Voice America Business Radio Network. Contentment is yours to control and easier to achieve than happiness or satisfaction.
Sell, buy, sell. All we talk about is money. Talk to an expert. Call now. Call now. Toll free 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Now here's the host of Profitable Investing, Jordan Kimmel.
And welcome back, everybody, to Profitable Investing. And I got to admit, I love doing the show. I love bringing guys on like Braun Mincher, Charles Whelan. These are the guys who are out there leading in the field in terms of what we really need to do is understand the market rather than get a hot tip at a cocktail party and not know what you own, get confused by the day-to-day media and talk. So what I want to really do is I want to give a little bit of credit here and a little bit of attention to what's been done over at our website, Magnet Investment Group. It's magnetinvesting.com with great technology in here. Our in-house whiz, Jason, has actually updated this website into a highly more functional site to allow for some feedback. Now, folks, if you haven't taken us up on the complimentary opportunity to have your own portfolio scored according to Magnet, I think you owe yourself that favor. I think we've done this for institutions for significant fees. It's time to help the little guy here, and I think that the little guy actually has the big advantage. What I've talked about is Warren Buffett needs to put $5 billion into an idea before he can invest with it. Some of the highest-ranked Magnet stocks of all trade between 500 million market cap and a billion. And the fact is these are companies that are actually accelerating cash flow. They are delivering to the bottom line, and they're even too small for many of the big funds to buy. The individual investor who's looking to put $50,000 or $100,000 into an idea, maybe even $1 million into an idea and come up with 8 or 10 of these of our best stocks, you can do this while fund managers can't. And this is the absolute advantage. And this market is far from efficient. There's no possible way you could think of this market as efficient when a price of a barrel of oil goes from 40 to 147 to 50 over a course of 18 months. That cannot be rational, that cannot reflect actually supply and demand. Well, the same is true for many of the individual stocks we see, which had doubled and tripled as a result of their incredible cash flow, only to be down 75 and 80% from June. Several of these companies actually, in their last quarterly report, exceeded analyst expectations in cash flow and revenue and made positive commentary, but are being forced sold by redemptions from funds as the herd continues to crowd themselves into short-term treasuries. We're hearing about one fund manager after another kind of not being able to handle it, to go into cash at precisely the wrong time. Now, don't get me wrong here, folks. If you came to me last October and you told me that you saw the inverted yield curve and there was just too much optimism around and you wanted to retreat the cash, I consider you one of the smartest folks alive. If instead you are retreating to cash at 45% down in the averages already, if somehow you are in a position, CNBC wanted to say the car is heading the cold in New York, but we're not done here yet. So the point being that we need to control the emotions right here, allow time to work out. I do have to say that there are stop losses being set off in our own portfolio. We're being very careful not to ride things down too low, because you never do know when there's an individual company that does have some smoke in the office and the numbers look good, but you know, we have learned never to actually fall in love with a company, never to average down in a company. But I will say we're trying to look the other way for a couple days as this incredible oversold market continues to build and build pressure. And folks, just picture a rubber ball being held underwater and then being pushed lower and lower and deeper underwater. Well, you know, when the hand is removed from that rubber ball, well, that thing's going to kind of shoot up. That's what gravity's about. That's what, in the stock market, a lack of resistance is about. This market, frankly, does not hit resistance for 1,500 Dow points. That's a lot of individual points if you're in the right stocks. And, folks, let me just say that the right time to buy the wrong stock is never. What you really need to do is to isolate on the right companies and then figure out where is the right time to buy them. And just to go back and summarize, normally we say it's got to be value, it's got to be growth, and it has to have momentum. At this moment in time, we're willing to come in ahead of the momentum when we see stocks with valuation levels that are so compelling, that have somehow been able to grow in this environment, in a better environment. These companies are going to be magnificent. For now, it is honestly nothing but pain in this industry. You're hearing about fear. You're hearing about irrational discussions and comparisons to the Great Depression, and people are just simply expecting the worst. And what Charles Whelan asked is, we know there's problems, we know there's deleveraging, we know there's redemptions. The only way to really make money in the stock market is to know something other people don't. And you need to ask yourself, how much of this has been factored into the economy? how much of this has been already factored into the stock market. And let me just remind you that bear markets like this, they're not normal. It just doesn't end casually. It doesn't end softly. It doesn't end with people shrugging their shoulders and saying, so what? This ends with sleepless nights where people waking up in the middle of the night asking themselves, can they handle it anymore? Can they stay in this market anymore? Do they need to go into cash? And it's my belief that most everybody, and there's still some panic out there yet to be had, but most everybody who wanted to sell or who can get scared into selling has already sold. The real next big question is, where do I get in? I heard it this morning. I don't mind if I miss the bottom. I don't want to be part of the avalanche. I want to start buying as moving averages are moving up, as more and more new highs develop, as lower and lower new lows develop. I am a realist, folks. That is not around the corner. That is not tomorrow. It's probably not the day after, but remember what I call the shortest period in the world of investing, and that's that short period before it's too soon to buy, and then it's too late to buy. So we're in this area where you want to be putting maybe a third, a third, a third. If you can't do a third, folks, do a tenth. If you can't do a tenth, folks, then get a good night's sleep and do it when you can. But go to our website, Magnet Investing, sign up for an upcoming webinar, get information, and get off of the emotional roller coaster. It's all about rationality. It's all about controlling that emotion. And it's all about getting through it with balance and discipline and not looking for an instant miracle. That's not what we're about. Folks, have a profitable week ahead. It is a tough environment out here, and this is why the opportunity has become so tremendous. Folks, we'll see you right here next week on Voice America. Have a great week ahead. We'll see you then. Bye now.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Tune in for another exciting hour of profitable investing right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.